Shut up and sit down.
This is Off the Walk.
Have you ever wanted to connect with someone but stopped yourself? I'm sure almost everyone has had this experience happen to them at some point in time, and for some people, like Richard Lee Tai, our guest today, they've made it their mission to understand this problem and to find a solution for it. Richard has a podcast, I would almost call it a lifestyle, called Excuses to Connect, whose mission it is to create the conditions that make meaningful connections easier. So welcome, Richard, to the show.
Well, thank you for that introduction, Eric and Lance, and making an excuse to connect with me. Yeah. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hey. Awesome. So, you know, excuses to connect, I think that it for sure is something that has impacted everyone, whether you're, I don't know, at a party or you're trying to reach out for some, but you're having doubts or something like that. Mm-hmm. Tell me kind of like how you got this idea in your mind, like when it started and how you decided to kind of go forth upon this problem. And
so I didn't come to this right away. I started when I was preparing for this TEDx talk, which was also titled Finding Excuses to Connect. I started going back through my life and realizing that their common thread was I loved making connections. And partially, I think it was to address my own sort of disconnections or sense of loneliness. And a time I really experienced that is when I moved away from Calgary, which is where I'm originally from, and went to University of Lethbridge for school. So essentially, I was leaving my whole community and support network that I had built up for years and going to a place where I knew basically no one and needed to start from scratch. And even though I was meeting new people, because I chose to live on campus and was on a floor with all these other people, I felt like all my connections were very superficial. Like, it didn't have the depth of relationship that I had been building up for years with my friends back in Calgary. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, one idea I had, I don't know if you've ever heard of Humans of New York, either of you?
I've heard of it, but I don't know, like, I don't know the in-depth details of it.
Okay. So I'll explain it. So the idea behind this, there's this photographer, and his name is Brandon Stanton, and he had an idea that he wanted to photograph 10,000 New Yorkers. And so he started going and talking to strangers and asking if he could get their story as well. So he's taking a photograph of them, he's getting their stories, and then he posts it online on his platform called Humans of New York. And it really caught on because it gave a window into these people's lives. Like, all these strangers that you see every day have their own amazing story to tell. Mm-hmm. And that sort of idea spread around the world where there's different cities and institutions that have their own version of a Humans of blank place. So there's a Humans of Calgary, for example. And so when I went to Lethbridge, I had been a fan of Humans of New York for quite a while now. And I had the ideas like, what if I started a Humans of ULETH, as in mm-hmm. University of Lethbridge? And so my second month I was at the University of Lethbridge, I had this idea. I searched to see if anyone else had done it yet, and they hadn't. So I'm like, okay, I can do this. Mm-hmm. Let's just try this out.
Okay.
And I started with interviewing some people I had already met. And what I enjoyed about this is that I was able to get a more meaningful connection out of it, because it's not just asking superficial questions of like, what do you do? Where are you from? It's more like, well, why are you studying what you're studying? And what sort of adversity did you have to overcome to be here? Okay. And over time, that project expanded until I was interviewing lots of different students and professors and had built up a team. And all this to say, it's like at that time, I realized that what I was really doing was creating an excuse to connect. I was creating the conditions there where I could talk to any student passing by, any person passing by in the hallway, and just say like, hey, I'm doing this Humans of Yuleth project. You have like 30 minutes. I'd love to be able to hear your story and share it, which is the same thing as what the Humans of New York guy did. And so when I was preparing for this TED Talk, I realized all these examples of human connection or storytelling or community building initiatives, what they all have in common is they're creating an excuse to connect. They're creating the conditions there that makes two strangers be able to have a conversation with each other. So excuses to connect I cycled through a few different names before I got to this,
right.
But excuses to connect has been very catchy, which is why I've stuck with it. So I sort of connected all my previous work and extracurricular experiences and fed it into this TED Talk that I gave last month. So yeah, that's a bit about the origin story of excuses to connect.
I see. And going back to when you decided to start this over at University of Lethbridge, so by nature, what type of a person are you? Are you the normally that type of person that's it's easy for you to do this normally, or is this something where like the first person you ever talked to, you were like sweating and you're like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I guess to start off with, I identify as an introverted person. So it's not, I don't like being the center of attention or like, I'm not the life of the party. I like having more, it doesn't mean I'm shy. Like I like having these more in-depth one-on-one conversations or in a small group. I think I built up my social skill over time. Because there's a few things before I went to University of Lethbridge as well. I had done a lot of volunteering and leadership stuff at my school and my community. And I think with all those sort of interactions, it helped build up my confidence with people. The first person I chatted with, I intentionally chose someone that felt more safe and comfortable. So who I chatted with, she is my RA, which stands for residence assistant. So she is like one of the people that was in charge of my floor on residence. So since I had already built up that trust there, because I messaged her on Facebook one day, I was like, hey, I have this idea. would you be interested if I could like interview you for this? And of course she said yes. And after that, it became more comfortable over time. It is definitely a barrier to approach a stranger for the first time and ask for an interview and not just someone I knew already. But eventually that became more comfortable as well. When I realized like, you know, the worst thing is no. But many times I found like strangers are very open to connecting. Like they love talking about themselves. So this is a great way for me to be able to connect with them.
Okay. That's cool. That's cool, man. So really for the first person, you didn't really go, you kind of like messaged them first and then they're like, oh yeah, okay. And then you went, okay. But then after that, then you started to like actually just boom, got persons walking down the hallway. You're like, all right, let's have a chat. What type of, so the questions you asked were more, like you said, more in-depth questions. And I think that's pretty cool. I mean, I think a lot of people nowadays, when someone approaches them, they kind of feel like it's like they automatically put up a defense guard or something like that. And so how did you kind of approach them in a way where it was, you know, you were like warm or inviting or something? Did you have any type of tactics or something like that?
So Brandon Stanton, who had done like thousands of these interviews for Humans of New York, he was asked that same question.
Okay.
And the answer he gave was that, because at the beginning he was so concerned about like, how do I phrase it? Like what are the right words to use? Like, do I call it a picture or a photograph or an interview or a conversation? And what he just ended up realizing is like, it doesn't really matter what he says. It's the type of energy or attitude he brings. Obviously, like, don't approach someone from behind and like spook them. Like actually make contact first.
Hey, you! I want to talk to you.
But a lot of it was just like, I mean, approaching with a smile smiling face and just saying hello, and then saying like, "Hey, do you have?" Just explaining what this was. It's like, "Hey, I run Humans of ULEF. This is a project where I interview people and want to share their stories. Do you have some time to chat?" And after that initial, and I still think it is a bit awkward because I think it's not in our culture, one reason or another, to like approach strangers. So you're right. Like, people do put up a sort of defensive barrier, but once I've sort of explained what it is and they've gotten it, then they're pretty interested in like furthering that conversation. Though I have had times before when I approached a student that was like sitting down and she's like, "I have class in 5 minutes." And I'm like, "Okay, 5 minutes won't be enough for us to do our interview, but hope you have a nice day." But yeah, that's how I approached it.
And anybody flat out say no?
No, I haven't had anyone say no. It was more just like they were busy.
That's because you're in Canada, so you know we're just too polite. we won't just go and say no. I'm too busy. Yeah. But no, I'm kidding. I mean, I think a lot of people are pretty willing to share their stories. So out of this project, like I guess the whole thing was to kind of get out there and kind of connect with the community and of course within the university. So I guess what was some of the takeaways that you got out of doing that project?
Yeah, because initially it was the reason I started this, as I explained, was kind of for a selfish reason because I wanted to make friends and like address my own sort of loneliness and disconnection. Mm-hmm. But it ended up, but I always had a community focus too, where I feel like you can build a stronger sense of community through storytelling. Because it allowed other students to see like, hey, these are people that go to my university and like some of these faces that they already recognize or people that they might see when they're walking down the hallway, realizing that everyone has a story to tell and that more than the sort of struggles, people aren't alone in how they're feeling with their struggles. Because I quickly realized, too, that a lot of first-year students felt the same way I did. Like, first-year students moving away from home, coming to a new place, not knowing anyone, they also felt that same struggle of connecting with people and making friends. And so I didn't feel so alone anymore. And with me sharing these stories to the wider public, they could also see, like, hey, this other student's going through something similar to I am. And so my takeaway with all this is, like, people are really interesting is one takeaway. I just love getting to know people's stories. And a bigger takeaway is that people aren't as alone as they might think they are. There's people that go through common experiences, and the whole thing with Excuses to Connect is like, you can make it easier for yourself to connect with people too. My Humans of ULEF is just one example of it, where I've created this sort of invitation here where most people will say yes if I approach them and say, like, hey, do you want to, can I have a conversation and share your story? Like, they're likely to say yes because I've designed it that way.
Yeah.
But there's lots of easier and smaller ways people can design an excuse to connect to make new friends as well.
Yeah.
How many people did you interview over your course of the time there?
Yeah. Because it started off with just me doing the project, but I always had the goal that to form it into a club, like a university club, so I could have a team of people running this. Because it's not sustainable for me just to do it all myself. But I think I ended up interviewing 60, 70 people over the course of my time in university. And then other people on my team interviewed folks as well. So it's still running at the university. I'm not directly involved anymore.
Oh, okay.
But it's good to see that there's still a piece of my legacy that's still going there.
So did you make some friends through that process? And like, do you still keep in touch with them today?
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting because a few weeks ago, I had a chance to catch up with one of the people I had interviewed, and we grabbed coffee, and it's about, I think, 2 years since we did our initial interview, and we've talked here and then. But what I sort of realized is in that 30 or 40 minutes of me initially connecting with them, like, I feel I've made such a deeper relationship than sometimes me talking with someone for a whole year and sort of just having small talk. Because it's just sort of, well, it's just small talk. Like, I don't actually get to know the core of who that person is and be vulnerable. And so, yeah, there's the person I caught up with. It was really great because it's just like, it just felt like we were just, even though we hadn't seen each other for a few months, it felt like we were just catching up and everything felt like we were just continuing our previous conversation. Yeah, and I think it just goes to show, like, having these more meaningful connections requires people to be vulnerable and touch on these deeper topics. Certainly, I mean, there's some people, like, I just introduce, and it's not like we've maintained contact or, like, just, like, regular contact, but it's still, I feel very comfortable where if I were to see them again, it's just, like, we're friends. Like, we can just start up that conversation again. So
that's interesting. So, like, I guess, you know, to further touch on that, so how do you go from doing the interview and then reconnecting, like, a second time? So how do you spark that conversation if like to further build that relationship?
Right. Some of the people I interviewed ended up being people on my team. Like, I asked them, like, hey, I feel like you are also the type of person that loves connecting with people and knowing people's stories. And so I had reached out to them when I was initially forming my club because I thought they'd be a great club executive to help run this team. So, I mean, in that way, I was able to connect with them on it or further that relationship. But there's also been times where once I did form it into a club, I wanted to host events as well, because I think one way people were interacting is, like, digitally, where they're reading these stories and making comments and liking it and sharing it. But I still wanted to have an in-person component where people could connect with each other too. So I did host events and I did reach out to previous people I interviewed. It's like, hey, we're hosting events now. Like, I'd love to see you again and have you come and you can connect with more people. So that was one way as well. Yeah. And then just some people, if I were interested in, like, getting to know better, I could just message them and say, like, hey, do you want to grab lunch together or go to this event together? So I feel like there's a few different ways you can keep building on that relationship.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like, our own podcast right here, the amount of strangers that we've interviewed, and I've thought about, like, the connect again, like, what are ways to kind of keep that relationship going, I guess you could say, because it's, you know, what you're explaining there, I pretty much had to do that for when we interview our guests, because the guests, I'm literally just cold messaging them. So it's all about it through, I have to depict a happy, positive, kind of inviting warmth attitude while writing in a text message. Hey, something to kind of like let them know that I really want to, you know, interview them and to get their story and to share it with us and to be vulnerable with us too. It's kind of like the same as what you're doing. So I totally agree with what you're saying. And so after you graduate and all that, Excuses to Connect obviously was still in your mind. And from somewhere from there, you moved into a TEDx event, which I don't know how that happens.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I can give you the...
I don't even know how you get into a TEDx event.
I can give
event.
You the history on this. Because so this TEDx event, the organization is called TEDx Youth at Victoria Park. So it's based in Calgary, and they have speakers that are specifically that are 25 or younger. And the process for giving a talk is that you have to apply. That's a question I got quite a lot. It's like, how did you get this TEDx talk opportunity, Richard? And for this, I applied in the sense of, like, submitting, I think, a draft version of my script and also, like, giving a short video as well. And then later I was invited to on an audition, and then they picked the final speakers.
Whoa.
But actually all of this happened back in December 2019. So this is pre-pandemic.
Wow.
The original date for this event was May 2020, but and the whole world...
So it obviously got postponed.
The whole world changed. And so obviously that got postponed. The event organizers and speakers, we did discuss, hey, like, do we want to do an online event or do we want to wait till we can do it back in person? So we decided we wanted to wait to do it in person. I think the next date we set was February 2021, but then the pandemic still wasn't, things still weren't open yet. And so the final date became July 10th, 2021. So that's when I ended up doing my talk. So to answer your question, it's like I applied originally and then kind of sat with this for a whole year and a half, and then I delivered my talk. But my speech went through a lot of revisions. Like, my original speech topic was not on excuses. Like, at that point, this idea hadn't come to me yet.
Okay, I see. So, and when you're doing your talk, what were some core principles that you kind of went through in there?
Yeah. So, as I was saying before, I was looking at all these different examples of human connection and storytelling and community building initiatives and trying to distill down what is it that they all have in common. And I was also able to distill it into these four core principles that I outlined in my talk. The first one is shift your mindset. I think just as it seems simple, but if you just start shifting your mindset to thinking like, how can I create an excuse to connect? Like, how can I create the conditions that make these connections easier? That's already very productive, because otherwise I found that I was stuck in cycles of worrying and overthinking. It's like, and it's very easy to get trapped in that hole. It's like, oh, what will they say? What if they think I'm bothering them? What if they reject me? All those things. It's just not productive, because I'm stuck in a cycle. But if I start thinking, like, how can I create the conditions so it makes it easier for myself and makes it less awkward or makes the connection more meaningful, then that's already a huge step. And one tool that I mentioned there is called a fear ladder. So I'll describe it to you. So a fear ladder, so imagine a ladder and you have a goal at the top of it.
Right.
And then you can break down that goal into the different steps of this ladder. In our case, like, our goal here is to connect with new people.
Yeah.
And for each of these different steps, you can assign it a different fear rating. So from like 1 to 10.
Okay.
And so me just approaching, and maybe it's the case for you too as well, it's like you just approaching a random stranger off the street and starting a conversation might feel like 7 or 8 out of 10 on the fear ladder, just because it's like, it's weird, right? But me just making eye contact with someone and just nodding or just acknowledging them as they're passing by might feel more like a 2 out of 10 on my fear scale, because it's not like I'm stepping all the way out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea with this fear ladder is that you're trying to figure out what's the first step that you can take that's slightly outside of your comfort zone, but still feels doable. And that was the case with my Humans of ULEF project, where I didn't jump right in and just interview a random student. I started with someone I already knew already,
right,
which felt like a 1 out of 10. Mm-hmm. It's still a bit weird to ask, but I know it's safe enough that it's likely to work out, which is why I was able to actually go and do it. So with this sort of mindset shift, I'm encouraging people. It's like, hey, like, everyone has their different sort of sociability and like tolerance and feeling with, or level of comfort with approaching people, is just figuring out your own fear ladder and what feels like a 1 out of 10 for you. And then once you feel comfortable with 1 out of 10, then you can move to your 2 out of 10 and 3 out of 10 on this fear ladder. So that's one of the core principles there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want me to keep going? I don't know if you had a question to jump in.
I feel like my fear ladder is like,
I don't have any questions.
You know, my fear ladder is at, at the peak of the peak all the time, but I don't know if, but I guess
even when you nod and smile, it's like
for me, I've always been so, like, you know, I'm an introvert myself, so it's kind of you have these awkward moments, and I think like you bringing up before is that you're always, you know, aware of what people are thinking of you. So you're like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to talk to that person because I don't know. He's going to think like I'm an idiot, or, you know, if I right. ask this, they're going to think I'm stupid. But for the longest time, that's kind of where it was. And I can mm-hmm. kind of relate now to that fear level where you're kind of like, okay, like you got to have to step out of that comfort zone and try to, you know, do things out of your comfort zone. And just, it's a way to help yourself grow, right? It is to be more comfortable, because the more you do it, the more comfortable you feel doing it, right? And I feel that way now as I start talking to people and, you know, even doing these podcasts, you know, it was very intimidating at first. But as you do it, you're kind of like, oh, you know, it becomes almost like second nature as you, you know, keep practicing, or how you say so is keep upping these fear levels until they really don't become a fear anymore, right?
What you're saying here of when you had all these fears and anxiety around connecting with people, I think it is our sort of natural way, or our mind or body's way to protect us from threats, right? Because I think we've sort of been socialized in a way where it was like, don't talk to strangers, like they're stranger danger,
and stranger like, danger.
Sort of keep to yourself, or all those things. But how realistic or how true is that fear actually? Like, are they likely to be dangerous? There might be cases where they are, but if you see someone that's like looks friendly and approachable, it's like it's just sort of our own internal fear and perception that's holding us back from connecting with them. And I think what you describe is like, well, once you started practicing it more, you realize that fear isn't really true, because lots of people are up for connecting and having these sort of conversations. And once you've been able to have all that evidence pile up, then you see it's like, okay, my perception of this isn't actually true. And that's how, yeah, you're able to step outside of your comfort zone more and talk with more people. Because there are easier ways to connect with people, like that's lower on people's fear ladder. So I can give a few suggestions. Like if you go to a coffee shop and whoever's at the till already has to talk to you, they're like, hey, like, what do you want to order? Or how's your day? Right. And you can just continue the conversation there. It's like, hey, I'm doing well. How are you doing? Right. It's already like, it's already designed there. You don't need to approach them. Like it's their job to talk to you. And so in that way, I hope that's like lower on people's fear ladder, because then you don't have to go through this awkwardness of like just approaching a random stranger. And it could also be look like going to events, because when you're at an event, everyone sort of already has that intention that like they're going to interact with each other or do some activity together. And so that's another excuse to connect. There's the conditions there for you to initiate those types of conversations. So that's sort of what I mean when I say shift your mindset. Like people can sort of come up with their own creative solutions on how they can go about this, and in a way that makes sense for them.
Yeah, that's a really good example. I'm gonna head over to Starbucks to the barista and now start talking to him or her for, you know, a good 20 minutes. Just tell him a little bit about my life story or something.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, and I think the thing is too, I wanted to point out, it's like, yes, it's great to have these, like, it's great when you have an opportunity to go in super in depth and have these long conversations with people. But I think even short interactions that you have with like these Starbucks baristas or someone in a retail shop, it's like those, I think, contribute a lot to a person's sense of belonging and connection in a community as well. So even if your chat is only for like a minute, I think you've brightened up your own day and you've brightened up that person's day too, with just going a bit more in depth of like how your day is going. And
it's taken me a lifetime to learn this as well. Like it only gets better with the more people you talk to. I totally agree. I mean, you start off with, yeah, you got, like you said, you got to go to social events where people are more, they're more likely to talk to you when you go up there and when you show up and you're like, hey, my name is this, what's your name? And they start talking. But I also agree with the one-on-ones too. That's when you also get the most vulnerable. I really do enjoy one-on-ones or like just really small little gathering type of talks over like, I am introverted / extroverted in certain ways. Like, I also don't like to be the center of attention myself. Unless I get drunk. Sorry. then everything just gets. But I also prefer the one-on-ones because that's when you really get to know someone and that's when you can actually like form a relationship with them. And then from there you can maintain a relationship and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it's taken, you never stop learning about this. The amount of people that have, I don't know, rejected me via either me cold emailing, cold texting, or just talking. And then just, man, you start to develop, like, you're like, it's okay. On to the next one. It's okay. Keep going and stuff like that. I stop caring after that. So yeah, it's something you can only keep improving by doing it more. So that's my take on it. And yeah, I love talking to people.
It reminds me, there's another TED talk where this guy did a 100 days of rejection challenge. So he intentionally went out and he wrote down this huge list of things that he'd likely get to be rejected on if he asked. One of the funniest ones is like, go to, I think, a Pizza Hut and ask if you can deliver the pizza. So, I mean, they said no, but it's this whole practice of sort of becoming comfortable and seeing rejection isn't actually that bad. And he has a super popular TED talk about this now. So,
that's amazing. Because it's funny because this brings up a story in my head, and I had a friend that, you know, we often says this guy is just kind of fearless because he would always go to the clubs and he'd talk to any girl, you know, could be like the hottest one in the club, and he wasn't afraid. Well, I wouldn't say he wasn't afraid, but I think he built up like over and over again, just kept talking to girls over and over again, getting rejected, you know, every weekend.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, he got a girlfriend. Right. And you know, and we were just like, oh my God, right? But he put himself out there, wasn't afraid of getting rejected, and continued to you know, kind of progress. Whereas I think a lot of my other friends, we kind of sit back and be like, no way, that's, you know, if I got rejected once, that's kind of it. I, you know, we'd be waiting for other signals before we begin to, you know, take it to the next level type of thing, right?
And I think the story you just shared, it's just all about what meaning do we place on the word rejection? Because if we make it mean that being rejected means like that I'm unlovable or I'm unworthy or something's wrong with me or whatever, then that's what makes rejection feel so painful and that we don't want to feel rejected. But if the type of interpretation we put on rejection is like, we just didn't work out. It's just like these two people, we don't vibe with each other then, and that there's plenty of other fish in the sea. And it like, if you don't let rejection be this thing associated with your self-worth, then that's how you're able to keep going with it and just trying and experimenting and not letting rejection or failure be things that hold you back, because you see it as a learning opportunity. It's like, if even if that talking with that one person didn't work out, then you have a little bit more practice and you're a little bit more comfortable with the next person you talk to. So I think
that's right. That pickup line's gonna work eventually, you know. It's good.
It's good. Hey, it worked for me. I mean, I got married and, you know, so I mean, it somewhere down the line things worked out. But yeah, no, that's a good you know, that's a good way to look at things. I think that's important, that you know, like you were saying, if you associate the rejection as something negative, then of course we're going to stop trying to do that, right? And I think if you look at it in a different light, then, you know, you're going to be like, oh, you know, I could do better on how I approached it, or, you know, I could try something else. But that's an interesting part is that it's up to us how we can flip that around and make something that, you know, majority of the people may think that it's a negative thing, and where we can twist it around and say, no, it's actually positive that I'm out there, you know, putting myself out there, because, you know, it takes a lot of courage to do that too, right? And I think that's another part that to yourself is like, wow, you know, if I can do that, then I can do whatever, you know, other things. So yeah, that's quite interesting to kind of twist things around, look at it.
Yeah. And I mean, even after what I said, I still recognize that rejection is painful. It's hard to receive a no. And so I think with my excuses to connect ideas, trying to figure out, like, partially, like, yes, it's still okay to hear no, but it's like, what are ways I can reduce the likelihood of that? Because I still want to make it easier for myself. And to touch on two other core principles in my talk, another one was approach with an invitation, which was the case for my Humans of Yuleth and, like, the Humans of New York project, where you're approaching with this invitation for this other person to participate. It's like, hey, I'm doing this project, I'd love to know your story. Or it's like, hey, I run this podcast, do you want to be a guest? It's like, you've created these compelling invitation there where they're likely to say yes. And there's other ways you could create invitations as well, because there's a card game I'm a big fan of. It's called We're Not Really Strangers. And it's this card game divided into these three levels of questions to get to know each other better. And this is a game that I've played a lot with my friends. And the way I frame it, it's like, hey, I have this fun game of questions to you for us to get to know each other better. Do you want to play? And most of the time they say yes, because when it's framed as a game, it's like more playful and lighthearted, even though, like, it does get into, like, deeper types of questions. And so that's also been a way I've been able to build deeper connections with people. And then on the flip side of that, one of the prints I talked about in my TED talk, it's called Get a Dog. let me explain. So
that's one way.
I don't have a dog myself personally, but I've seen so many times where I'm just walking down the street and I see a stranger approach another stranger and ask if they can pet their dog. It's like, remarkably, this dog here is like breaking down these barriers and giving them an excuse to connect with each other. So I was thinking, like, what are other ways you can design social interactions as though you had a dog? So this is the reverse previous principle, where instead of approaching other people with an invitation, you're creating an invitation so, like, people will want to approach you. In this case, like, if you had a dog. But there's other ways you can do this as well. I've thought of future merch idea that I'll eventually create. It's like, if you had a sticker for your laptop or water bottle that said, if you're reading this, come say hi. So literally you're creating these symbols or excuses to connect there, where people will come and say hi to you. Some other examples I've seen in the wider, like, internet and network of this is, like, people with shirts that say free hugs, or come ask me about. So there's lots of ways you can design these invitations here so that people will want to approach you. So I guess this sort of segue for...
If you're reading this, you're too close. If you're reading this, you're too close.
That's a funny idea as well. Because I know we had this conversation before, but where you have your off the walk hat, and you've said before where people have approached you and asked you what that's about. So that's a perfect example of
That's right. And I've done that myself, even with, like you were saying, with dogs. And I don't know what it is with pets, but, you know, it's just this medium where you know that the owner would probably answer the questions that you ask about the dog, you know, and dogs are just, you know, it's like, oh, what kind of breed is that dog? Or, you know, like you say, can we pet the dog? And it's just for some odd reason, dogs are inviting. Like, they're just so friendly, right? And dogs are just always, like, super excited to see just people, right? So Maybe that's why.
Straight up, like me and Ken back in the day, we actually had an idea that was called Rent a Dog, because I mean, this was in the for trying to get girls and stuff, but it was like rent a dog, rent a baby, you know, just one of those.
Rent a baby. I'll tell you right now, I have a baby, and babies are like, I think dogs get way more attention than babies. Babies are like, you know, not as, they do get attention, but not as much as dogs. Dogs are like 100%. Lots of attraction there.
Tell me more about idea. This rent a dog idea. I'm very curious.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much it, man. Like, just rent a dog, go for a walk, get girls. Girls come over, pet the dog, you strike up a conversation. Hey, and you then know, later I think return the dog.
that's not that idea might not work, because if I just go be a dog walker, I get paid. And I get a dog, right? So
that's true. I mean, our idea never went above just idea the idea stage, but we recognized at a young age that dogs do have a lot of people that approach them. So it was in that same that same mindset right there. So it's completely true. Completely true.
So I wanted to dive a little bit deeper into your podcast and what inspired you to want to do a podcast.
Right. So
out of all things,
as I was developing my TED talk and I came clear on this excuses to connect idea, I realized that this has a lot of potential. Like I wanted to build a whole brand and business around this, because it seemed like this is the sort of message that I want to promote for the rest of my life, because it's very much aligned with my previous experiences and values and personality. And so I have big plans and vision for Excuses to Connect, but the first idea I had was doing a podcast. Part of the reason why I started a podcast is I knew a whole bunch of other people who did podcasts. So my thought was, if they can do it, I can do it. Right? It shouldn't be that hard. And so my initial stage was reaching out to people who already knew did podcasts and asked them, like, what's the setup like? What do you use for recording? How do you publish podcast? And after I got all my answers, I'm like, okay, I can do this. And the reason I enjoy it is because it's also an excuse to connect with any of these guests that I want to and have these deeper types of conversations. And so, I started reaching out to some interesting people who I knew who are connectors and community builders, and just getting to know deeper, like, how they do all these things. Because with Excuses to Connect, one thing I wanted to highlight is, like, I'm not unique, because there are a lot of other people that are doing similar types of projects. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to connect connectors, because there's a lot of other people that do this, and I want to be able to highlight the amazing work that they're doing. And so this podcast, as of now, there's 4 episodes, but I've recorded a whole bunch that I'm very excited to share with people. And
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll be sure to post that link to your podcast when we release this episode as well. And naturally, that's how we got to connect as well, too, because when you were talking to people to find out how they were working their podcast and all that, you know, your friend Leslie led to us, boom, 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 you know, circle of life is complete right here. You know what I'm saying? So and then from there, it led us to have this conversation. It's crazy. It's like, it's awesome. So it all works out, you know, at the end. And it also looks like, because I'm just also on your website right now, too, that you do coaching, too.
Yeah. So it's a much more recent thing. Since of May, I have been taking a coaching program where I'm learning how to do coaching. And just to be clear, this is not like coaching people in sports. I'm not a very athletic person. This is like coaching people in the realm of like life coaching, in terms of like helping people gain clarity over their goals and how to take action towards them. And the way I branded myself is a connection coach. It's really the type of people that I want to work with are other people that have experienced some level of disconnection in their life. And this disconnection comes in many forms, as I outline it on my website. It's like one of it is that these are all things I've experienced before. It's like being surrounded by people, but still feeling like you're lonely, or the sense of sort of floating right. in between different friend groups, but not really feeling grounded anywhere, or like having like, this is my group of best friends. Like all these sort of things. So I want to help other people to be able to build the types of connections that they want in their life, because I feel like connection is so fundamental yeah. to a person's well-being.
That sounds it sounds pretty interesting. Everything you described, I was like, I fit into all of these, like not belonging, not having a set of friends.
Yeah,
and so I might have to, you know, give you a call here, Richard, and sit and talk or something. But yeah, that's it's quite interesting. I think you know, I was relocated to China for a couple of years, and I felt like that would have been something that would totally have helped me. Although, you know, language was somewhat of a barrier for me being over there, but definitely maybe having some ideas or some coaching around how to, you know, generally make friends in those kind of situations would definitely be beneficial, because we, like me and my wife were there, but she's quite the extrovert, so really I relied on her a lot. But I can see that if I was there, I mean, and I didn't really make a whole lot of friends there, but you know, half the reason was just, I just didn't know how, right? And we did connect on different levels through sports and whatnot. But like you say, I'm not very athletic either. So, you know, sports is not my strong suit. But definitely, yeah, I think listeners out there, if you struggle with that, you know, sometimes it's great to have someone on your side to maybe give you some pointers and stuff so you can meet some friends, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't have it all figured out either. I want to be clear with that. Like, I'm still on this journey as well, but I feel like I have learned a lot.
You know, yeah. And, you know, Lance, when you were talking about China, that actually got me thinking about when I was in Malaysia. I was, you know what, for me, I was meeting so many people on a weekly, monthly basis and all that. And yet, none of the connections I had were really, you know, besides maybe like a certain few people, a lot of it was more superfluous and stuff like that, right? Even though I was meeting a lot of people, it still felt like I was all, like, still lonely, because the connection was, like you said, it was just surface level. I never really got to like a deeper connection. I mean, of course, I had a couple friends that were much closer, but it's weird, but it's true. You know, you could have meet a lot of people or know a lot of people, but it's all just mostly on the surface level. And really they're not really deep. You don't really have deeper connections to them, you know, and doing something like what you're doing potentially can create more deeper connections because of the style you're doing it. It's not just like you say small talk where you're just like, hey man, how's the weather? Oh, you know, it's 25. That's cool.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm saying? So for sure, I think that, and I think it's a skill or a skill set that a lot of people, it benefits a lot of people, because this happens all the time. You know, it's even crazier too, because like, it could be someone that you're just trying to connect to via email or something, but you don't even write the email. You know, you're like, I don't want to email them, even though you don't even look at them. You're just literally just emailing words, and they can't see you or anything like that. And yet you still don't, you're like, I don't know what they're going to feel about me and stuff like that. And so you never take that shot, yeah, right?
And I want to help people overcome
yeah, for sure.
those internal obstacles or fears there, because I feel like you miss out so much on life when you stay within your comfort zone, and no judgment to any of these people, because it's like everyone's where they're at, but it's just sort of recognizing that things don't change unless you take some action. Like, if it is, you are feeling a sense of loneliness or disconnection or not having the depth of relationships that you'd like, you have the choice and power there to take action and try new things and try to change that aspect of your life.
Exactly, for sure. And you have just started your journey on this podcast with just your four episodes released. Even us, we're relatively new. We released, what, Lance, like 40-something episodes. We've met so many strangers as well. And, you know, I've made a mental note of all of them that I will, and they're around the world too, to visit them. If I'm in that place, then in that city, that country, whatever, I'm going to come down. I'm going to hit you up. Let's go out. Let's chat and have another, and keep that relationship going. So I think that Excuses to Connect is literally the perfect title for a podcast. Yes. You know what I'm saying? So Richard, I mean, thank you again for coming on and going over Excuses to Connect, because it's something that I am obviously very familiar with, because I also do a podcast. Lance is obviously very familiar with, but there's a lot of listeners out there who are having troubles connecting with people, or are potentially they feel like, because maybe they're introverted and all that, they don't want to do it. They're not taking that first step. You know, they're not looking at your four core principles, which, you know, you will, through your programs, your coaching programs, and through this podcast, you can show them. So there's a lot of people out there that would benefit from, and your TED Talk too. I don't know if is it on YouTube or something like that. If it's on YouTube, they can watch that too.
not yet. So the process, how that works is, after the TED Talk is done, they submit like a final video to the TED organization, who reviews it and then posts it on YouTube. Because I've gotten a whole bunch of questions too. It's like, hey, Richard, where can we watch your TED Talk? I'm like, I wish I could see it too. I wish I could know what it looks like. So definitely, I mean, when it's up, it's up. I'm going to share it on my Excuses to Connect social media.
Yeah, and I will watch that too.
Awesome. I did want to mention, first off, thank you for coming on to the show and sharing your experience with us. And I did want to say that, you know, another important thing about connecting with people, and I think you mentioned this before, was missed opportunities, right? So not being able to connect with some people, those may be the missed opportunities that you don't get, who knows, right? Down the line, they might remember you from somewhere or something that you connected through in the past, and then that opens another opportunity or doors for you for other things, right? So that I think is definitely an important part about why it's important to connect with people as well, right? Not just, of course, making friends as well, right? And you know we always talk about networking, right? It's important to network, try to make sure that you get to know more people, so that helps open, you know, more doors for you as well, right? So
yeah, if I could share some final thoughts.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, the point that Lance, you just brought up, I think it's important to recognize missed opportunities, but also not get hung up or ruminate or regret too much over it too. Because there are always, the thing with like finding excuses to connect, it's like there's always more opportunities. There's always new people that you can meet today. if you go out or find some online event or something, somewhere to interact with people. And you never know how any connection can transform your life. As you said, like meeting one person, one thing could lead to the next, and you're open up to these opportunities, or you end up marrying them. It's like, I that's the thing I find very interesting too. It's like, ask people, it's like, how did you meet your partner, or how did you meet this person? And just to be able to trace that all back is quite fascinating, of like what the initial interaction or the initial excuse to connect was. And if I could recap my four core principles, which I did like completely do it. So the first principle there was shift your mindset. The second was approach with an invitation. The third one was get a dog. And then the last one I haven't touched on yet is recognize our collective humanity. So what I mean by that is that part of our challenge with connecting with someone is our perceived distance to them. Like, we feel this distance can come in, like, we feel like we're really different for them, or they're not approachable. Or one I've seen a lot is, like, people that are in positions of authority or power and have, like, this long list of achievements and titles, it can feel like we're very far away from them, that it's like they're not approachable at all. But if we recognize that everyone's human and everyone's struggling with something, whether you can see it or not, then I feel like that helps equalize things. And that gives you the common basis for you to actually connect with one another. Because even very quote-unquote successful people are still struggling with something, whether you can see it or not, right? And that becomes your point of having a deeper conversation and connection, if you create the space and opportunity for it. So, yeah, and a big part of my TED Talk was, like, just raising awareness around this, because, I mean, all three of us on this call right now, we've said that we experienced this, have had times in our lives, too, where we've had this difficulty connecting and making friends and all this, and there's lots of other people that go through this as well. And by talking more about this and raising awareness around this, I think it helps normalize this. Because otherwise people feel a sense of shame, like shame in the terms of, like, oh, I'm the only one that's going through this. What's wrong with me? Why am I not good enough? All these things. When in reality, people are not alone in experiencing this. And that's an important point as well. So, yeah, I just wanted to add that point in there.
For sure. Maybe just share your how people can get in touch with you.
Yes, for sure. So if you want to get in touch with me personally, you can follow me on Facebook at Richard Leitai and on Instagram at richard.leitai. If you wanted to follow the Excuses to Connect platform, it's also Excuses to Connect on Facebook and Instagram, and wherever you want to, your podcast listening platform is, you can also find that. And yeah, I'd be really excited if you reached out, because if you're reaching out, you're making an excuse to connect. So I'd love to be able to chat with anyone.
Awesome. Same goes with us too. If you're looking for, I'm not a position, you know, in an authority position or something, I got no credentials, so it's going to be easy to reach out to connect with us over here. You can connect with us as well, offthewalk.info@gmail.com, and on Instagram at Off the Walk Podcast. So, and we'll make sure that when we release this episode, everything that you just mentioned on the website and the Instagram and all that, that's going to be listed on our little synopsis and little kind of thing for the episode. So yeah, but Richard, thanks again. If you ever do another TED Talk, put that up and let us know. You know,
hopefully.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, thanks. And for our listeners out there, thank you, and until next time, come walk with us again.